Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 115.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you've been having a fantastic week. Not sure if it's coming through a ton, but I am feeling incredibly congested right now. It's been kind of a rough week physically for me this week, so I'm pretty exhausted. I'm wrapping up Inks on Spend the Night issue 3. We are smack dab in the middle of the Evie and the Helsings issue 2 Kickstarter. I'm trying to get this podcast out on top normal billions of life things happening, and then my body's like, yeah, I'm gonna throw you some more monkey wrenches, bro. So it's been a month of a week, and so here we are though. Weekend's coming up, new month is starting. Let's try to have a positive outlook on this, huh? Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, the day this is being posted is September 1st. Somehow it's September already, people. I don't get it. I am prepping the latest issue, I guess you can call it that, of What's Brewing, my Comics Coffee Metal newsletter. You heard that right, the Comics Coffee Metal newsletter. The first one went out last month. I had a lot of good feedback on that. And it is going to be the main thing where I... point everybody to things I'm doing, things I'm working on, my recommendations that I also talk about on here, some additional ones. And I'm hoping in the future, as things kind of level out, deadline and work-wise, to have some extra stuff that's just going to be on the newsletter. But we'll see about that. I have the longest history of biting off more than I can chew with work and wanting to do things. So really doing my best to keep things as simple and even as possible, but I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver on this, but I think it's a pretty good newsletter so far. Again, I've had great feedback on it, so if you're interested, there'll be a link in the show notes below to sign up. You can always just check it out, and you could always unsubscribe after. No hard feelings. I sincerely get it. I have more than enough newsletters hitting my inbox every week, every day, and sometimes it's just a lot. So that's why I'm sticking to my promise of just once a month, no more, no less, and that's it. So all right, I hope you sign up, and if not, that's fine too. All right, next up, the Evie and the Helsings Kickstarter is less than 2 weeks from being completed. We recently staked through our $9,000 stretch goal. Amazing. We are incredibly thankful for all the support on that. So now all backers, physical backers, I believe a digital version happens too. You get a postcard of the first of the main cover of the second issue, the one that I drew, and then you also get a digital comics bundle. And as we head towards the next stretch goal of $10,000, there will be an additional postcard for all physical backers of Steve's main variant cover, the real cool one with the decapitated zombies and the symbols and all that. And then the one I am most excited for is the $11,000 stretch goal, and that is the second Evie in the Helsings song being unlocked. The song is titled Face It. I really, really, really love the song. The last song, Fangs, it was instrumental. Really, really happy with that. We kind of talked about it a little bit on a couple of live streams. We were on the Comic Book Yeti live stream and the Comic Book Bears live stream this week. I'll make sure there's links to that in case you're interested. But Steve and I, Steve was cool with me saying that when we hopefully get to a collected edition of Evie and the Helsings for these first four issues, we want to, properly hire a female vocalist and have a full-on four-song Evie and the Helsings EP. So that's kind of what we're trying to build up to. So I don't think it's going to be entirely dependent on us hitting every stretch goal for that to be unlocked, but it'd be nice. It'd be nice because that just means more people are going to get the chance to read the book. Again, we're not unappreciative of where we are right now. We are just incredibly happy that we have the amount of support we do. Even if you haven't backed and you're just sharing the campaign with us, Thank you. It's all important. It's all makes us feel like this work we put behind it is incredibly worthwhile. So, yeah. So go check out the campaign. There's still plenty of original tiers left, like commissions from me and Steve, the original art for page number 5 of the second issue, the original art for the metal cover, pencils by me, by Patrick Brower of Challengers Comics in Chicago. Those tiers are still available. On top of all the cool covers we have, and the sketch covers, and the box sets, and all that good stuff. So go check out evieandthehelsings.com, link in the show notes. And once again, thank you for your support. Okay, so with the craziness I mentioned that was happening with my week so far, I have recommendations, but I do not have the mental capacity right now to properly formulate my thoughts on these things and all that. But real quick, the latest album, Descent from Orbit Culture, one of my favorite new bands of the past few years. It's an amazing album. They keep delivering more than I expect them. You know, when I first listened to their original album, North Star Amnesia, I'm like, this is a band that, well, this album is great, they're on the cusp of their next great album. And their last effort, Shaman, and now this one, Descent. These are not the albums I'm expecting from this band, but they're just as good as the albums I was expecting from this band. They're zigging when I'm thinking they're going to zag, and I'm down for it. They're doing amazing things. They're becoming much more melodic, but they're still heavy as shit. They still got those killer breakdowns. Still got those gnarly low vocals with, you know, and lead singer, I forget his name because my brain is fried, but, you know, not only is he a great, you know, riffer, but his James Hetfield-like snarl with his clean vocals is just getting tighter and better than each passing song I hear. And yeah, it's really great. Check it out if you like some just kind of brutal but melodic, awesome metal. Also, real quick, a comic book recommendation. Thanks to the awesome Holly at Fantagraphics, I got a copy of Eight Limbs from Stephanie Phillips. And I'm sorry if I mispronounced this. Julia Ali. It's spelled G-I-U-L-I-A. I think it's Julia, or I don't know how else I would say it. Lali on art and Lee Lowridge on colors. That was Stephanie Phillips writing. Eight Limbs. It is a awesome, awesome graphic novel. It is the story of Joanna, who is a retired Muay Thai fighter, and after becoming a coach and a mom and, you know, training new fighters, she comes into the care of a young woman named Mari, who, you know, seems to have the same passion behind her for fighting, and detailing their relationship as it kind of grows, and the conflict that comes from that. It's just a beautiful story. The art is, you know, gorgeous. It's that very thick, you know, thick brush line, but still very clean, not gritty. The action is beautifully rendered. The colors by Lee Lowridge are amazing. It is just a great, great book. It really reminds me of one of my favorite movies of the past decade or so, The Warrior. Is that movie older than a decade? I don't know. Focused on. but it really reminds me as something akin to that. It's a fantastic story from Fantagraphics. Eight Limbs. I would definitely be talking about it a whole lot more. But yeah, if you're a fan of something like Creed or Warrior or Rocky, this, I think, has a rightful place among them in that type of story. So definitely go check that out. Eight Limbs from Fantagraphics. And that's your comic book recommendation. All right, so before I get to my guest, I do have a bit of a disclaimer for anyone. There is a discussion for a length of time in the podcast that involves Comicsgate and, you know, political discussion talk and things like that. And while it's not a debate, and my guest and I certainly have, you know, not 100% simpatico opinions on certain things, it's not antagonistic. It's just a discussion and kind of where the conversation kind of veered into. So, but I want to be respectful of the things people are comfortable hearing and not comfortable hearing. So I just wanted to make sure I included a timestamp for you to use if you so wish. So if you don't want to hear this conversation, it occurs between the times 34 minutes, 38 seconds, and 1 hour, 25 minutes, and 22 seconds. And then from there, it's just us having our rants and raves about the latest Ninja Turtles movie and my guest project. So there you go, and now to the show. All right, it is now time for my guest. From writing for Marvel, DC, Pixar, Fangoria, Disney, to his own music projects, to hosting the Coolest Geek Alive podcast, and just a ton of million other things, including his new creator-owned Kickstarter, King of Kings. Today I have Jesse Blaise Snyder. Jesse, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Don. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to geek out with you about, any number of the geekery that we share in common.
For sure, for sure. But as the show goes, I have to ask, before we get into the meat of things, let's do it. Jesse, Comics Coffee Metal, what are you digging right now?
Well, I'm a big tea dude. I drink loads of sweet tea. I like my spoon to stand straight up,
yeah,
as they say. And I'll get the heavy cream and get a big milk mustache going before I fill up my coffee and make it nice and creamy. So I like like a little Sunday morning ice cream coffee kind of thing. Because if I drink coffee, I just get super jittery. Mm-hmm. It's people already, when I go on these YouTube channels and stuff, everybody always accuses me of being on drugs, but like that's just me. I have a lot of energy, and when I drink coffee, I like legit, I'm like I feel like electricity's flying out of my fingertips. So I stick with the tea, and that's enough for me. And I love tea. I come from a family of big coffee drinkers, though. And then mm-hmm. and then what is it? Coffee, metal.
Comics and metal. Yeah.
Immediately I'm like, I this is like self-serving. Well, okay, first I'll say, recently I was super, there's just some newer material from Accept. And their lyrics. I had to do a cover of, what is it, Balls to the Wall for the Ultimate Jam Night out in Los Angeles in California. And, I had to learn the lyrics, and the lyrics are freaking legit. I mean, all we remember is you got your balls to the wall, but the rest of that shit is really like, because for me, when I'm doing a cover song, I don't really like doing cover songs because I consider it such a responsibility to do justice to something when you're covering it, to honor it and, also make it your own. And like, there's so many parts, there's so much nuance about it, and I didn't get into this business to do that. I got into this business because I'm a writer and I like to write songs. So when you're covering a song as a writer, all I do is just try and get myself into the headspace of the person who wrote it and try to like connect with what are they trying to make me feel here. So mm-hmm. when I deliver every line, it feels authentic energetically to the thing that they've been doing. And when you do that, you really get in touch deeply with the lyrics. And I was blown away by Accept's lyrics in that song, and how great it was, and how disguised it was in the robes of metal, as it were, as is often the case. As a young musician, I felt like there was a lot of bands, because my father is the lead or former lead singer of Twisted Sister. Twisted Sister was a band that got a lot of flack for no good reason kind of thing. Were easy to make fun of and goof on, that's what happened with them. So they really had to fight for every bit of respect that they got, which really kind of shaped my father and the band and, how they, went after things. But, it's really insane. For me, when you look at the lyrics of D. Snyder, it's like this, the Constitution come to life. Who are you to look down at what I believe? I'm on to your thinking and how you deceive. The vocabulary is so legal and almost sanitized in this gray rousing package of like real feeling. And it's really some high level stuff that's going on there. And I appreciate artists because of, you know, my father, who are doing something that's really smart, like the Ramones, you know, but it seems stupid to the layman. But when you really get in there and you see, like, man, you know, these arrangements of these Ramones songs, they're just meant to, like, trick you into needing to go buy the record and get it, hear it again. Like, they're really just catchy in the right way and so clever, like, you know, you feel like you've been bamboozled by the people. Like I can't believe they got me with this. You know, there's something so wonderful about that. And the Beastie Boys, you know, are another example of just like enjoying worshiping at somebody's altar. And the Balls to the Wall was like the beginning, and I've gotten deeper into their catalog here there, but some recent stuff they put out, The Best Is Yet to Come. If you haven't heard that song, it's so damn good. And The Undertaker is damn good too. I think there might be another song that I hadn't heard, but just heard recently, called Kill the Pain. But okay, all three of those tunes were freaking dope, man. They just like, they just sounded so timeless. And the lyrics are really good and really meaningful. And it's hard as hell. Even though it's really powerful and dramatic, some really great metal going on. And I'm like, I'm a soft metalhead. I don't listen to really hard stuff. I'm just like really particular. Once it starts getting really heavy, there's certain things that I really love, and like, you know, certain kind of rhythmic hardcore and stuff like that. But a lot of things like death metal, when I can't understand what's being said, and I have to like literally read the lyrics in order to join in. I can't get into that because I view music as this form of communication that I love so much. It's really funny because we were talking a little bit before we came on the show about, you know, being a geek and a fan and that kind of thing, and about like knowing the minutia behind the scenes of like the special features for all the movies.
And exactly. Yeah,
I do that for movies and I do that for comics and, you know, a lot of that stuff. I'm very interested in how that stuff works. I don't know why though. I don't give two craps about musicians, and I guess it's because my father was a musician and I know a lot of musicians. So I just don't care because I'm like, yeah, I know what that's like.
There's no veil to be lifted.
Yeah.
No,
like, no, I bet it was hard, wasn't it? It was hard. No. Let me guess. Was it hard? Oh yeah, so hard.
No, yeah, I totally 100% get that. It's interesting that you bring up Accept, just because I don't know a ton of their stuff aside from like, you know, the more common things. But
Balls to the Wall,
I am not surprised to hear, because there's so many of these elder metal statesmen and bands that they're still putting out stuff to this day that's almost some of their best stuff yet. Like,
yeah,
Testament.
I had heard some stuff from a band I really like called Kix a while back. And I remember like being three songs deep into what would have been my favorite Kix songs back in the day. I was a little kid when I was a big Kix fan. But I mean, like, their stuff holds up. I don't know if you know Kix. They're like an AC/DC light. But they've got some great songs. One of their ballads, Don't Close Your Eyes, is freaking awesome. But it was funny, I haven't been able to find the album that I had been given on Spotify. I was really pissed.
I know a couple people who are in the Kix, and I seem to remember them talking about the later stuff being really good too. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the fact that, like, these people were, you know, they came up definitely within the era of, you had to be really good at what you did, because there's no, you know, everything's recorded to tape. You know, the era of digital recording and all that is.
We live in such a weird time now.
Was you know, much farther in front of them. So, not that it's not a great thing, in a lot of ways, but also, like, you know, they have this skeleton, this foundation of just like chops and writing and things like that, and just like having to be road dogs and all these things, that it makes complete sense to me that like 30, 40 years on, they still got it in them, because it's just who they are at this point. And
yeah, you know, I mean, people, musicians are musicians. And, you know, we get into music because we love it. It's funny. I find the people who kind of do it and retire, they weren't in it because they loved it. They were in it because they were looking to prove something, and that seemed the way.
Yeah.
You know, but like if you're like me, it's not a, your career just sort of like changes over time. Like, you know, I've got a band now called Dilf USA. I was going to say, you know, that's really like the one metal thing that like is more recent because we're doing this mashup of TNT by AC/DC as like the music to Two Live Crews, We Want Some Pussy. And it's super metal and really, really cool. We're working on the music video for it right now where we're like old guys trying to get some pussy before we die. it's very fucking funny. We've been doing that one for a while in clubs. But I've gone through so many different incarnations of music and like what I was and what I've been and what I wanted for music. You know, I had a band called Baptized by Fire, which started off with my drummer and best friend dying in a car accident after we came home from a gig, and me spending the next decade with survivor's guilt, kind of subtly holding myself back from doing anything worthwhile in music because my friend wasn't there to do it with me. And, you know, that led to me going on Rock the Cradle, which is something that I never would have did, which is like this reality singing competition against the other children of rock stars. I was literally about to quit music. The day I decided to quit, I got that phone call to do Rock the Cradle. And I was like, well, I'm fucking quitting anyway, so I guess I'll do it. And then after that, when Baptized by Fire didn't go by any major labels, because I was always of the mind that I wasn't pitching myself to anybody. I was going to be not discovered, but I was going to get myself in the right places and people were going to come to me. And if they didn't come to me, then it wasn't meant to be. And the truth of the matter is, you know, it's very hard to be a single individual and make everybody come to you all the fucking time. Most people go to the people. I was just tying one arm behind my back because I really, you know, I had everybody as a child going like, well, you got to ride your dad's coattails kind of thing. And that was never my interest. I just loved music and was good at writing. And I liked it as a communication, you know, tool. So, and I always tried to do it as something that would honor my father. But I made it harder for myself to do so that I could satisfy all the other people. And then when I finished Rock the Cradle, everybody wanted from me the same thing that they'd wanted from me for years. They wanted me to be Bon Jovi. They wanted me to be Justin Bieber. They wanted me to be handsome for a living and write more love songs and, you know, just be something that they could make billions of dollars. Essentially, it was a really nice compliment. It was like, Jesse, I could make billions of dollars off of your ass if you'd just be willing to be a handsome person for a living. And I'm an intellect, and I have always avoided being handsome for a living because that literally, for me, it undermines what I'm here to do. You know, I have things to say, you know, like literally people trying to get me in front of the camera or as the star of the thing has made it, like, it's guided me in the direction that I don't really prefer. I would have been a comic book editor if I had, you know, known any better. I would have been a music producer, you know, and songwriter, work as an executive, because I write so many things and I can put myself into position to help other people. I can't use all these freaking songs. And, you know, like there's so many things that I can do because I'm not really interested in the hey, it's me thing. But at the same time, I look around and I see like some weak shit, you know, all over the place. It's just like what is happening is not wonderful. And people are dying every day who have done it so well. And I don't see replacements for them. So, you know, for me, I just kind of keep going, well, I know how this is supposed to be done right. I know how these scripts should be handled. I know how these characters should be handled. I know how this music and these performances, I know how this artistic world of being fucking cool and counterculture, which is what all the things I love used to be. They used to be freaking counterculture. I know how that works. The counterculture shows the way. And, you know, for a little while now, we've been like a victim of the establishment, and we've become the establishment across the board, and everything that used to be counterculture seems like dead in the water. So I'm like, you know, champion of fucking counterculture, man.
Well, it's really interesting to hear you talk about the people who are really in it. Like, you don't stop, right? And it's there's an exact parallel to that with artists and comics and writers. Because there's so many, like, I think of Ramona Fardone, the legendary Wonder Woman artist. She's in her 90s. She's still doing commissions. She's still doing great art. And because there's no end to this, because you love doing it. You know, my wife and I often have these conversations. She's like, you're never going to retire from this, right? And I'm like, no, I'm never going to retire from drawing.
When you're doing what you love, you don't want to retire.
No,
that's why actually the comics industry in particular, I mean, granted, music and comics, it's similar. But women feel this pinch the most in Hollywood. But like, people go out of fashion. And oftentimes there's really no rhyme or reason for their unfashionableness. And sometimes the audience, they have not gone out of fashion with. It's just the people in power they've gone out of fashion with. You know, a really great case in point is Chuck Dixon, who's one of the great Batman writers, of any amazing arcs of Nightwing and Robin and Batman of plenty. This guy is a journeyman writer who, if his name was on it, I would read whatever it was, and I wasn't the only one. And then one day, he just stopped getting work at DC, and nobody could understand what the hell's going on. And now this guy's back as a part of the counterculture who had lifted him up, which is funny because I literally have a publishing company, Killer Rabbits Company, and 6 years ago before my fire and my divorce and all the fucking shit that I went through over the past bunch of years, I was hiring Chuck to do a book. I knew the same thing that they know, that Chuck was amazing. I don't understand where he went. He just disappeared. Oh, well, he became unfashionable now with the new people who they brought into the thing. And it's just like, you know, it's like freaking George Carlin used to say, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And the thing with me is like, I'm in it. Like, I'm automatically in it because of who I'm associated with. And because I've always automatically been in it, I have come to recognize it for all of its uselessness and stupidity. And I have no interest in it whatsoever. So I'm just constantly always like trying to run away from that. And in the past bunch of years, it has seeped into every aspect of society. And it's just so fucking reductive and just what a waste of our freaking energy. And I'm so tired of us seemingly being represented by two groups of people, one crazy one on the left and one crazy one on the right. All of these people do not know how to communicate, do not know how to be freaking civil to people, do not know how to take the high road when you're in a position of power as a writer, as a creator, whatever, and you're talking to random assholes on the internet. You know, well, maybe if you grew up doing freaking reality shows and being an MTV VJ that, you know, people wanted to take shots at or whatever, you develop a thick skin like I have. If you haven't, I can tell you, their behavior is ridiculous. And it just, especially in the comic book world and the people responsible for drawing and writing Superman and the Justice League, if these characters can figure out how to get along, you know, these creators need to be able to do the same. And I really like, it's just, it's very disappointing. I have friends on both sides of the equation. I've been stuck in the middle of the divide of things. And I'm not choosing sides. Because you guys are having some stupid, political problem with each other. All the problems that I see going around are that we're listening to you yahoos over there and you yahoos over here. Because in the middle somewhere is some reasonable steps to take on everyone's behalf. And until we figure out what those steps are and start listening to those voices in the middle, we're just going to be in this stupid quagmire where all of the art is worse for it. And all of the music is judged through a lens of political partisanship. All of the comic books and films are looked at through the lens of, is this freaking, you know, is this liberalism or whatever? You know, like, it's like, if you're doing that, you're supposed to be doing it artfully. You know, I could do every single stupid thing that they've tried to shoehorn into a film or into a song or whatever it is better than they're doing it, because they're not doing it with tact, because they don't think they need to have any, because they think people are stupid. But it's just, that's the thing. It's, you know, we're finally catching up to that breaking point of Hollywood has always thought we were stupid. And now we have empowered, like, the fans of everything through podcasts and live streams and all this stuff. We are now as powerful as they are as a voice. And the fans are taking back everything. We're going to take back music, and we're going to take back films and TV and comic books and all these things. And they're going to be better again because we're in charge.
Well, the thing I've seen as, you know, someone who's just, you know, making my own things, doing my own things, is it's definitely a breaking point with all things. Eventually, you know, the Hollywood and all that, they're going to get tired. They're not going to make enough the amount of money they think they should be making from all these nerd properties, so to speak. And then they're just going to drop it like a bad habit. Yep. But in the meantime, you know, we went from somewhere like kind of all like being under this global umbrella of like, here's where we have all our things, even, you know, so much as like, you know, you had like the main comic book publishers and then some smaller publishers, but like in the past 20 years now, and thanks to things like Kickstarter, you don't need that. You don't, there's plenty of people who, you know, I'm making my book on Kickstarter, you know,
that's the thing, Don.
There's going to be this fractioning of everything. And
wait, you know, and think right now what's going on.
Find their tribes again. That's what I think.
You're absolutely right. But and let's get back to that in 2 seconds. But to say on what you just said, it's right now there's a break on Hollywood, on all this stuff. And they are so behind the curve intellectually. Even if they began to correct things tomorrow, it would not be fast enough to turn around what is happening right now. And this next 6 years of them failing with all of the plans that they already have in place, in that time, the internet will have taken over the space, and huge independent films will be blowing up and fundraising and whatever else. I guarantee you, there is no chance that this void will not be filled. And that is really what we're looking at right now, a complete repudiation of this system as it is.
Yeah, it's, you know, and they'll label it under something like, oh, it's superhero fatigue. And it's like, no, people just, you're churning out the same thing over and over again. And people don't want that. They want you to be new and you won't be different. And sometimes it'll fail and sometimes it won't. And, you know, it's just those things where it's like, like I said, people are just going to like, we're going back to our tribes. And I think a big part of that right now, especially from what I see within the comics community and other communities, is, you know, this slow bleed out of Twitter and how, you know, Twitter became, you know, probably 10 years ago, I think at its peak 10 years ago was when it was like the most vibrant. And like that's where like a lot of the communities kind of thrived on there. And then it's just been this decline and this polarization from everybody. And now that that's going away, people are sectioning off. People are going to all these different, you know, even though like it's not doing so great, people are going to Threads. People are going to Blue Sky. People are going to Mastodon, you know, and it's slowly breaking off. And this, it's becoming like forum, the old forum days where you would have your couple forums you go to, you have the people you go to and you talk with. And I'm not entirely sure that's a bad thing anymore, just because it felt like, you know, when we're all in a room together, we're all yelling at each other. And it's just like, there's just too much noise happening. And, you know, as much as I'll miss, you know, what Twitter used to be in terms of being able to reach other people and spread the word on things and all that, it hasn't been a social place for such a long time. It just became, it was just a loud room that you yelled at and hopefully your friends heard you while you're yelling.
That's the thing. If you're, or the only people I really follow on Twitter, because I left 6 years ago. The conversation was so ugly. And like I said, I was stuck in the middle of just like, I had some good friends of mine who were in Comicsgate, and I had
the rest of the comic book industry, who I was also very good friends with. And I was like, literally just like, okay, so I guess, what? I don't talk to anyone about anything. Like, you know, like this is just my new life now. You know, it was what it was. And I was, you know, just forced into that position like that everybody else was and everybody else has been, you know, throughout the, you know, I mean, for a while now with the stupid pandemic and everything too. You know, it's just like, it's been this weird time of people really forcing their opinions down each other's throats and acting really self-righteously about it all at the same time. It sucks, man.
Yeah. You know, and when Twitter's become a place to where, you know, people are just, you know, people just can't create things and people are getting, you know, yelled at because, you know, death threats because people didn't like the way they wrote X character or whatever. It's like, all right, we've gone too far. Like we need some separation from people because people are not, they don't know how to behave. In a sense, humans, we're all just a bunch of, you know, monkeys in the end. And, you know, we have civility, but when people think there's a bigger gap, a bigger barrier between the words they're saying and how they affect people and what they mean, when there's not that big of a barrior, it's just too much. It's too far.
I heard something that somebody said, and you know what? And I'll even say who it was. It's this guy, Eric July, and it was very wise words the way he put this out. He said, you know, he was having some trouble, some legal trouble and something. And he was talking about this at length of these people who are basically have aligned themselves against him kind of for no good reason. But that these people had started with they didn't like him and then walked backwards from there. And that is a real telling way of expressing what's really going on in our world. We're going, I disagree with them, and then we walk backwards from there, meaning we bring it back even worse from I don't like them to, oh man, I've been digging into them and looking at them with eyes that hate them, and guess what my eyes that hate them have seen? I hate them even worse than I thought I did. Look at these things that they think that I don't think. You know, it's just, it's backwards thinking. And, you know, we need to, I called this week on my show for like, where are all of the men with the long white beards that we can turn to for their wise, sagely advice that is measured and calm and not reactive and redactive and like all, reductive and all these freaking, you know, things that we're getting from every other leader in the world. It seems very clear to me that most of us are right up the middle and it's just a bowling ball shot right up there. And instead we're like, but what do the people all the way in the back over here say? Well, but wait a second. What are these people? Wait, let's go dig up some worse people. Who says the most extreme things imaginable? You know, on Twitter, the biggest problem is not that the voices exist on Twitter. The biggest problem is that the media talks about them as if they are the majority. Mm-hmm. So this is what's been said on Twitter. One guy said that. Two guys said that. Some asshole said that. There are literally thousands of people who are going to respond to an article about Star Wars. Two assholes or three assholes or even freaking dozens of assholes does not represent an entire community.
Yeah. No, I completely understand what you're saying with that. You know, I've seen my fair share of articles like, oh, on Twitter, people are upset about Last Jedi. This tweet from Obi-Wan's cum dumpster says, like, you know, who cares?
Yes.
Like,
oh, yeah. Who cares what Obi-Wan's cum dumpster said? And oh, just because you don't like Obi-Wan's cum dumpster doesn't necessarily mean he's a freaking Republican. He might be a libertarian. Perhaps he's Green Party. We don't fucking know. You know, everybody just immediately categorizes people in like these exact boxes. They just make up caricatures of the people around them, which I think is just so dehumanizing and lame.
Yeah. You know, and I do have to say, because I do have friends who have had very bad experiences with people who use the Comicsgate hashtag, and who align themselves with that group. And as a personal thing of mine, I just don't associate, because what they're doing doesn't interest me. I do my best to just ignore it. I'm not going to go out and attack anybody because they have that or whatever. I'm over here. You're over there. You know, peace be with you.
I'm more like this, right? It's like this, right? The average person thinks, or let's say you would imagine the average black person says, I'm going to stay away from those Ku Klux Klan members, right? I'm just going to stay away from them. But there's one guy who dedicated his life to collecting people's hoods by demonstrating his humanity to them, treating them like human beings, and giving them a bird's eye view into a black person is right here and he's helping you and he's being kind to you. Are black people also bad? To actually change their mind about something. So I'm not interested in putting the group that everybody's judged as to be bad over here and putting the group that everybody judged to be good over here. I'm interested in being open to all of those people to always come to me at any point so that we can all be of positive influence upon one another. There's good in all people. There's bad in all people. There's good people in every bad neighborhood. There's bad people in every good neighborhood. You know, we can't think so myopically. You know, it feels good to just go, there's a pedophile. I'm going to chop off his penis and cast him off a cliff. But I don't want him to maybe, like, just in case there's reincarnation, be reincarnated right back to Earth in a form of a little baby ready to do it again. Because I believe that everything is energy and we need to work out our energy the right way. And it comes through communication. It comes through when somebody's got a cry for help going on. And I'm not trying to really sympathize, because I think it's the worst crime ever. But at the same time, you can't just kill these people. We have to fix the thing. We have to end the suffering. Most of the people who do that crime, they do that crime because it was done to them. So, you know, like there's things, help that people need to be having. You know, you don't just, make every drug illegal. You make them illegal and you make getting help to these people easier, so that we know that people are using and we can be of benefit to them, and less people die and more people get the treatment that they need. The moment you make something like illegal and shameful or whatever it might be, you're just setting everything up to be worse, to exacerbate itself.
No, I'm given those examples. Yes, I understand. And I'm with you on, with those two examples. Mainly the drug one, I understand completely. Like, there's ways to fix that and do all that. All I'm saying is, when you shun anybody.
No, I get it, I'm not
sitting here shunning anybody.
No, I understand.
Who hasn't directly hurt somebody that I know through their words, through their actions, and seem unrepentant about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I do also have to say, if a large faction of people that I know and I care about and I consider friends have had nothing but negative interactions with a certain group that labels themselves a certain way, if other people, and it's not like an unknown factor in the industry, if you're online,
mm-hmm.
granted, the average person, the majority of people who buy comics are not online. They're not on Twitter. They're not on there all day,
Oh yeah, they have no idea.
Twitter's not real life.
Yeah,
but
I love to say that.
You bring up this, Eric July fellow that someone's like, they decided they hated him. But if you flip that, then there's that whole milkshake thing that happened with the young female Marvel editors, where people started attacking them for predisposed opinions about this, but this is
actually a very nuanced conversation, and this is the thing that people don't want to admit, because it has been an invasion of people who have been getting brought into positions because they're the right looking person at the right time. And these people haven't exactly made the audience happy. And so then all of a sudden the conversation gets focused not on the nuances of, hey, look, you were the right person at the right time, but you showed up and you didn't deliver the goods and the audience tried to reject you on some level. And then you, in some cases, and I know there are awful people saying awful things, but there are some people who basically have just been saying, I didn't like this. And there is a lot of it becoming stupid jokes online. Stupid people behaving stupidly, but this is the internet and we are the editors. We are the writers. We need to be able to take it a little bit better than we do. We like don't want to allow any of these things to enter into our mind that there are fans out there and they might not be polite and they might not always say the things the way we want them to say it. I mean, they're fans. They're just people. But they love these things. They're passionate about these things. If we want to hold on to the fandom and the people who passionately love things, we have to like be a little bit above silly conversations about this stuff. And I think, you know, if we all learn to just turn the other cheek and let stupid people be stupid people, we wouldn't accidentally be empowering them by allowing them to turn their stupidity into a whole thing. And the only reason why they're trying to turn their stupidity into a whole thing is because clearly they feel disempowered. They feel like people are being mean to them. And this is what people do when I'm disempowered and people are being mean to me. So now I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm doing this to repower myself. And like, you know, that's just human nature. I feel like it's really difficult to just constantly be mad at everybody who reacts that way in defense of themselves when celebrities and people in powerful positions like I am, and I've been my whole life, so I've learned not to freaking do this to people, you know, are there. You lose your access to people the moment you're dismissing them and you're dismissing the perspectives that they're coming from. And a lot of that is going on online. It always gets focused on, oh, look at this screenshot of this one conversation. Dude, there are ugly things being said by everybody on both sides. Ugly things being said. And everybody who posts every screenshot is protecting the side that they're on. Always. Protecting the side that I'm on. So I'm going to show you the things that they said, and they're not going to show the things. And I'm telling you, in every community, there are good people. There are people that I have worked with. Like, you know, I'm stuck with my friend, you know, but he is my friend and he's a great guy. He's not racist. He's not sexist. None of these things. It's the most silly thing. Mark Bolton, but he's technically a member of Comicsgate. Now, people that you're talking about who might use a Comicsgate hashtag, it's any number of people. It's just people who are being jerks online, people who want to be assholes, people who think it has meaning. Some of these people are really kind of nice about it. Some of these people are really kind. Some of these people are dunderheads and idiots. So it's like there's no just one thing. When there are individuals like you're dealing with who are clearly unrepentant, whatever, that's it. You know, you take everything on an individual basis. And when there's people who are harassing you, you absolutely, you know, you block people. You do whatever it is you have to do. But I think in general, you know, as an industry, we have to just kind of be like above this shit and demonstrate what real wisdom and leadership is in the world, because we're the people who read books. And without us, other people don't know anything. I mean, look at what they tell you on the news all the time. It's just they're out of their mind half the time.
No, I understand the idea behind let stupid people be stupid people, not let it affect you. What I'm saying is that, and you mentioned it, that there's people who are being stupid. They are using that hashtag. And that's, and a lot of that is where it comes from, is where people are, that's their association with that. Yeah. And
the weaponization of the term.
It is not, I don't think it's a mark against the person if they're like, well, you know, I've had nothing but bad experiences with people who use this hashtag that they willingly choose to use. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you know, oh, all people from Alabama suck. You know, it's, I'm choosing to put this hashtag on here for this. And then other people who may feel like, oh, I'm just here because my experience has been a positive community of us doing our own things and all that. Why did this person block me? Why am I on this block list?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, all of a sudden it becomes like, you know, a personal attack against them. And it's like, well, that's where I'm getting at the point where it's like, there's too much of
people being able
to like, just look at somebody and say, I didn't like this. Fuck you. This fucking sucks.
Well,
you
know, I understand.
Why'd you make the decision to do this book? Why?
Yeah. Well,
you're a shitty editor. You're this. And it's like, you know, I understand like your reasoning, like, you know, we got to kind of be above that, but that's kind of a new thing for it to be deluged like that.
Oh yeah. It is. And it's hard.
This industry,
conversation, you know, number one is the powerful need to overcome it. Conversation number two is we have to encourage better online discourse. It has to become cool not to hate. You know, the Offspring have a great punk rock song called It's Cool to Hate. And it's all about this lameness, you know, the shit that you see online, the way people talk to each other, because it's cool to hate. Yeah, got him, bro. You know, like, but everybody does it on both sides. You know, the right-leaning people do it, and so do the liberals. How you really told that fascist, you know, whatever it might be. Like, it's so hateful and terrible, and we can't reward it for anybody. You know, I really believe we have to be better, and then at the same time, we have to ask for better. But you can't ask for better when you're being worse. That's why the first thing you got to do is we got to stop being part of the worse. You know, we got to stop adding to that misery that's already there.
No, and I think a lot of people have really chosen just to not to engage that stuff because it just leads to, you know, the people who are trying to get that rise out of them, or trying to get that, you know, rage, or who send that, you know, there's plenty of examples. I think recently I saw one with James Gunn. You know, someone, you know, said something really nasty to him or whatever, and he's just like, "Are you okay?" And then the guy was like instantly like backtracking, like, "Oh, I didn't expect you to respond. I'm sorry. I'm actually a big fan. I didn't mean to say that." And it's just like, Well,
people say weird things that they don't like, abstract thoughts that they have. You're watching a movie and you're like, "You never noticed the sucky ways Scott Snyder does," because he was analyzing his film. And now Scott Snyder goes, "Hey, you're dissing my film?" And he goes, "Oh no. Oh, I'm so sorry. Holy shit, it's Scott Snyder. Dude, I was just talking out of my ass for a second because I thought I was just talking to empty space." You know, like, this is what's going on. This is why when the reaction is the reaction that we've been giving for so many years now, it really, like, the audience goes, "What the fuck, man?" Because, like, they're not so conscious as to understand what it is they're doing as a whole. They're just a bunch of individuals who are playing with Twitter like it's like this new tool. Meanwhile, so-and-so's committed suicide. Like, they're not fucking thinking about the ramifications of, I did kind of pile on that girl because I didn't like the performance either.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. There you go. Like, this is the internet now. You know, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think the idea that you're just shouting into the void is hopefully dwindling, but it's definitely a cause to a lot of, you know, these types of things where people are actually, you know, unintentionally or whatever, you know, causing this added stress and grief to other people who are just trying to make things and try to do the best thing they can. And so, you know, I don't want this whole conversation
to be kids though. We were talking about this, right? You got kids.
Yeah.
You've seen it, man. The one kid wakes up a little upset. That kid knocks the shoulder of the other kid when they walk into the kitchen. That other kid goes to put down the placemat and only takes one instead of the two that it would normally take because he's pissed. And the little back and forth aggravation goes on for hours until the two of them are screaming and pulling each other's hair out. And what does this really tell you? It tells you that when somebody is behaving badly, it's come from somewhere else. They just hand the energy around, you know, and maybe this person woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Maybe they haven't had their medicine today. Maybe they just got fired from their job. And now here they come to social media, the place where you could scream into the void. And they do. and it's just sort of like the thinking on a whole, you know, as we turn we let the people seem like they're groups, you know, like none of these groups are freaking groups, man. You know, we're all loosely affiliated, and that is it. And they put us in rooms on social media so that we'll yell at each other and that they get more clicks and they have more energy on their websites. You know, I think it's The Social Dilemma or one of the Netflix documentaries. You can see a lot of great, you know, math on how they're handling us. But they're literally just, you know, like pitting us against each other. And, you know, the reason why I think I kind of see it a little bit different maybe than everybody else is because at like the furthest edge of the thing, like I see a plane, like, and like at the furthest edge of one side, there's the worst person that is like encapsulated by a term, you know, right wing, right? And then on the furthest left, and this person exists, you know, like for those people who think, oh, well, left is no, left can also be pushy the same way a Catholic can be pushy and trying to tell you you're going to go to hell and trying to tell you that you're a bad person because you're eating meat or whatever it is. There's an extreme version on each side of this thing. But I only see that real extreme thing at the very edge of it. And the rest of it is this rainbow of degrees, you know, of people. And I always view most people as closer to me in the center than they are to this edge of this extreme thing. And that I can find more common ground. And I always do. You know, I get along with everybody on both sides of the thing. And I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I believe that we've got a lot of trauma here on planet Earth. And it's got to be worked out. We got to work this trauma out. And, you know, just killing each other and yelling at each other on the internet isn't helping anything. It's making it worse.
No, it is. It is. We all need to be better. We all need to realize that, you know, there's humans at the ends of these handles.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen my more than my fair share of, you know, people, you know, who are like me, who are, you know, left on the left side of things, you know, more and more just like, you know, just don't do the dunk tweeting. Don't do the dunk tweeting thing and all that. Because it's just not helping you. It's just spreading that person.
It's a waste. It's a waste of energy.
You know, and do I think people should, you know, instantly dislike a person, you know, just based on very limited social information? No, but I also don't think that, you know, I also understand that if someone
walks towards you in a trench coat.
Exactly. And, you know, granted, like, you know, I fans voicing their opinions to like editors and stuff. That's been comics since the 60s. You see these letters that they print in the back of the pages. Yeah. People are upset. They're passionate. And the difference is like, you know, even though some of those probably, you know, believe, you know, could be a little mean, at least the ones they printed. The ones you saw, again, those were selected. You know, there's a filter between like, I'm physically writing this down. I'm putting down all my thoughts as opposed to, oh, I don't like, you know, why is this person editing this book I love? I don't like the direction it's going. She probably slept with the bosses to get this job. Like, like, no, that's not a logical thought to be making right now. And you're just a piece of shit. And you're really just making things so much worse because, while, yeah, I think we all need to have a little bit of a thicker skin about that. When you're saying that, and then, you know, your buddy next to you is like, yeah, probably, you know, I bet you did it, you know, and then it just piles on and piles on. It's like y'all are like giving yourselves a bad look, and you're kind of forcing a person into a corner to be like, well, then all of you, I don't want nothing to do with.
See, it's just
these are direct experiences from people.
And I've seen experiences. But when this audience is going after the new trendy creators, What they believe they're doing is defending the 100 creators who are out of work right now because they're not in vogue at the moment. And there are 100 brilliant creators that have been working in the industry for ages, and now they're just gone. And people would love to read their work, but they're not able to get anything anywhere because they don't play the right part anymore. So they are either independent or they're moving into a new industry. And that is being reverberated throughout the community by people who actually go to conventions, actually buy books. And there's a lot of superficiality that's come into comic books and geek culture that the geeks don't know how to trust anymore. And it's really just, it's a weird quagmire of this thing where everybody's misunderstanding each other's motivations, and everything is coming from love. You know, I want to get in on this. I believe I have a voice here. I'd like to be represented. This is cool. Great. And then there's another group that's feeling like, I feel like I'm being squeezed out. I feel like I'm not being heard. I feel like I'm being punched down from all of these people on high. And I understand that a lot of them are being very nasty. It's just the stupid internet, though. Internet empowers stupidity to be.
I understand coming from the point of like, you know, this creator I loved isn't getting work anymore. Why? Their work has not, their talent has not suffered, if it's gotten better. And, you know, I know people, there's an absolutely stellar artist that I consider a friend named Mike Norton. And, you know,
I love Mike.
He makes his living. He talks about like, you know, he does, you know, that man can draw anything and he can draw it damn well. Like,
Rattle
you
bug.
Know, yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I just had a signing with him for his awesome new book, you know, Rock Gods of Jackson, Tennessee, which I highly recommend to anybody who loves.
Oh, that's great. He's great. He deserves your support. He's one of my like a whole crew of great artists from Chicago.
Yeah.
Great people from the Chicago area.
Another fantastic artist named Ryan Kelly, who, you know, he's done work for DC and, you know, he's had Saucer Country. He did stuff for I think it was Lucifer. Unfortunately, one of the biggest books he had was, tied to a writer who, you know, had some really terrible things associated with him. Acted very badly. But he's doing just absolutely phenomenal work. Like, he is like one of those guys who just like, you look at his art and it's like, how, like, this guy can fucking draw, you know? And, you know, I wish he was on the biggest book in the world right now, but, you know, I understand that. It's just, you know, a lot of these things, I think a lot of these things people are so upset about are not even decisions like these editors are making. It's from above. You want to know why the X-Men are being reset yet again?
Absolutely.
It wasn't the editor's idea. It wasn't fucking C.B. Sapolsky's idea. It was fucking Kevin Feige's idea.
Yeah. See, well,
because,
this is because like
it needs to trickle it down, and everyone.
Yeah,
and I think what gets lost is they don't understand. Like, a lot of people don't understand that all the people involved, you know, even if you don't like the decisions that are being made with the characters you love, the people involved are doing their best because they love comics just as much as you do. And that gets lost a lot. Like, they don't, you know, it's like they don't make these decisions or do these things because they don't love the characters as much as you do. They're getting their shot and they're trying to make the best out of it.
Yeah. It's just, the problem is everybody reveals their political leanings. So the moment you're talking about political leanings all the time, the audience starts to put everything that you do through the lens of your political leanings. And because the narrative from on high, it's not really their choices. It's what's being pushed is in alignment with their political leanings. It makes it this convenient, oh, see, you're on their side about this thing that we don't like. They're corrupting our myths. They're changing that. Like, so there's this whole crazy us versus them thing that's been going on. And this is a lot of the things that are driving Comicsgate. It's all so fucking stupid. But it's not even a thing. It's a thing that people think is like a thing to some degree, but it's just a freaking loose nonsense. The same way people getting upset and flaming people. I forget what you were saying, where, like, you know, gotcha, where they come back around and got them good, Earl. You know,
the
that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just the time of day, and did they have their coffee? And, you know, it's not really this concerted effort on anybody's part. It seems that way over time, of all these desperate people in all these different areas having all these fights, because that's what the internet propagates. But, you know, I just really, like, I like, for me, it's just it's not about the details. It's about, we all need to just, like, recognize that there are millions of us in the center, and then there are just fringe interests, and not let it color our view of the world of, you know, that we live in, of all this stuff that we love. And I really still believe that we have all come to worship at the same altars for, you know, a lot of the same reasons. And just because our, you know, our, the way we communicate with the rest of the world is very different than each other, doesn't mean we, you know, aren't the right, you know, the right answer to our own problems.
No. And I get it, you know, knowing everyone's beliefs, it has made everything so much more convoluted, but also the further division between left and right, because there's so many characters, so many creators on the, you know, who are part of the LGBTQIA+ community. And when you're, you know, having someone who's like, well, I'm, you know, conservative and I support these political leaders who, you know, who those political leaders' actions are saying, well, this person here shouldn't be allowed to be doing what they're doing. They shouldn't be allowed to be who they are.
Yeah, but one political position does not people vote for things for all sorts of reasons.
I know, but they're being told.
No, this isn't fair. Yeah. Because everybody keeps trying to make this bullshit argument. The Democrats don't do anything to help us. They say they're going to, but they don't.
They
don't do anything.
For sure.
So, like, they say a thing and they don't do anything. So when you're holding a Republican to one political position, he's not changing his vote, even though this thing that to me is the most important thing in the world, maybe the most important thing to them in the world, is pollution for the future of the planet and the food system or the health system and the corruption that's in the system. Different people have different priorities, and it's not up to you whether or not their priorities are in the right place. It's not up to me. That's called self-righteousness. We can't be putting our righteousness onto other people. What is right for you is right for you. As long as they're not hurting you personally directly, we can't be casting all these aspersions. That's the whole point. The whole point is, and this is the thing. One person has one view. I'm voting Republican. That doesn't necessarily mean they're this Republican that you see in your mind. There's a lot of reasons why somebody might vote Republican. There's a lot of reasons why people vote liberally. There's a lot of reasons why people don't vote at all. And there's a lot of reasons why people vote independently. You know, we can't just be making all these snap judgments about each other. This is the thing that I mean is such a slippery slope. We need to see all of these assholes as what they are. Assholes, you know, lone gunmen, you know, ridiculous people. We need to shrink the idea of them instead of putting so much emphasis on their existence, because we're literally empowering them, and we push the fringe ideas into little groups together so that they can feel more powerful, because they feel powerless. That's why they're yelling.
No, I get it. I don't doubt the fact that the worst actors are the smallest minority of all of these things on all fronts. But I also can't blame somebody for saying, like, okay, well, regardless, you know, you're still voting for a politician who is actively making my life, my existence more difficult in my state, in my country.
And let's say that person's a farmer.
And I don't want to mess with you.
But wait,
it can go both ways. I understand that.
No. What I'm saying is, you don't know if there is some sort of taxation going on for all farmers right now caused by the Democrat Party. Something that they're not publicizing is really hurting the working man, because that's pretty much all the decisions they make. Things that hurt the working man, which is what most of the Republicans are. They're people who own small businesses. They're the most affected by the choices the government makes. So they go, oh, I can't do that. They're hurting me. They're hurting my Uncle Bill. So it's all about where your personal perspective is. You're like, you're hurting me by virtue of your vote. No, man. Everybody's just got to forgive everybody for their vote. Everybody is basing their vote on a lot of different factors. And, you know, are you going to judge the Muslim who grew up in a Muslim family and is trying to figure out the right way to do the Quran? Because, you know, there's some people that he knows and his family members who have died, you know, fighting the infidels, but he doesn't want to do that. He's the good guy. But oh, they're all bad. It's racism all over again. We just are turning it into groups that we might be able to identify. We went from, oh, I can identify their skin color to I can identify things that they think. And that is just a recipe for disaster. I mean, I'm somebody who writes fiction and has worked, you know, in this place studying fiction. Do you know how many times I've read this story? It doesn't work out for us when we start editorializing society in this way. The witch hunts are not a good idea. It was wrong when the religious people were doing it. Now it's wrong when the atheists are doing it. I was the atheists. You know, I had to learn that, like, there's a balance. I can't just erase the Catholic Church from the planet. I need to learn how to work with the people who believe those things, not distance myself from them as far as humanly possible. We are a society. And unless we're going to start dividing this country up into little pieces, and I'd really rather not see that be the case. You know, it's really up to us to end this stupid fight, because it's just hurting us all, and we could be excelling forward in unity, focused on the things that we have in common, and instead we're focused on the fringe thing. We're focused on the people who are being mean to us instead of all the people who are being nice to us.
No, I understand where you come from, and I don't disagree with a lot of what you said, but what my point I was getting at is, In terms of, like, you're working with somebody and you have that interaction, you have that knowledge about someone's choice of political party, political candidate, mm-hmm. and you're like, well, you know, I'm living in a state where this party is actively working against me, be it whoever you are, if you are a small business and, you know, there's stuff being enacted that's hurting you. I think it's fair to say both sides are shitty to the working people, to be honest.
Oh, they're all shitty to us, man. It's just a freaking shitty game.
It's basically, you know, it's really all of us and them. And it's the group fights they have among us, making these straw man arguments of, like, I don't want to delve further into this conversation with this, because I think it's just, I don't think we're going to be far off the whole, like, trans grooming thing and all. No, that's all ridiculous arguments meant to distract us from the other shit that they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And the shit that the Democrats are not doing.
Oh, yeah.
Because the funniest thing to me is when, you know, someone who's, you know, I've had family members like this where they're like, oh, well, you know, the Democrats said they're going to do this and do this. I'm like, yeah. And I'm pissed at them about that too.
Yeah.
Like, I can be mad at the people I vote. I don't have to say, just because I voted for you, I'm going to be happy with you all the fucking time.
Well, that's the one thing that drives me crazy is when the people don't hold their people accountable. And it just, like, drives me so crazy. I'm like, because you're always trying to capture that middle. And the middle people just want to see the people that are being elected by the edges, you know, be held to what they say that they're going to do. And when, like, they let each other get away with things that just are insane. It's insane what'll like go by, and people are just like, well, you know, it's all for the greater good, because the other side has been trumped up as such a boogeyman that we need to, you know, we need to do anything we can to get the result that we want to get here. And I mean, it's just, it really is. It's such a slippery slope to play that game.
Yeah. No, and it is exactly what you said. You know, people are not holding the people they're electing accountable for these things. And it is on both sides. I may vote Democrat, but I don't, you know, it's just because they tick the most boxes for me on these things. But, you know, it's been well established at this point, like, there's things they've backtracked on, things they have not gotten done. And I don't know if over time these things will coalesce. I don't know if over time, you know, as we age up and more of us are like, you know what, this is stupid, you know, as you know, not to paint all the boomers under one brush, but as they, you know, age out of all these offices and all these things and are less the dominant force in politics,
Hey, I'm perfectly fine with blaming the boomers. I mean, like, it's not like every boomer had any power or say over this, but in general, you know, I did not see enough kicking and screaming as I have grown up. And I have been kicking and screaming about this shit for a long time. And now we've gotten to the point where the kicking and screaming has been really like the energy is being funneled by these corporations. And they are keeping us so with the circus and the cake. And we are eating cake and we are having circus. And we are not doing anything to actually stop the terrible stuff that's going on planet Earth right now. And I mean, it's just, we are being raped and pillaged behind the scenes, and everything is just being inflated. And people like you and I can't afford to live and feed our families as easily as we should be able to. You know, I just saw a breakdown of everything, the way it's inflated over time. You know, it's like 29 times what it used to cost for a house. And like, you know, compared to the 1930s and it's, you know, 29 times the rent, and, you know, and it goes down this list of the amount that the money's increased six times. It's increased six times how much money we make. It's increased 29 times how much we pay for a home, how much we pay for rent. That, guys, do you reckon that that's like, I can't even do the math. It's at least like four times the thing. It's gone up what we are paying, are being asked to do. And because you guys are in the better position and it's only gotten worse for the lower guys, instead of the boomers going, hey, shit, look at this. This is affecting me like this. This has got to be affecting the people below me and younger than me even worse. We got to do something about this quick. They went, oh, thank God I'm going to be relatively protected because I was born a little sooner than those ones. Yeah. That's really what it seems like they did. And I understand, you know, everybody's watching their own asses, but like, oh, dude, I mean, like, you know, when you make the debate about climate change, it stops being about pollution. I liked it way better when it was about pollution, because that's a lot of things. There's a lot of different pollutions that are going on. But instead, now it's about climate change. And like, you know, who needs to deny climate change? We just need to talk about all of the other forms of pollution. What are we doing? Like, shut up about the stupid climate change. There's sludge. There's shit in the water. We need to clean up all these plastic particulates. We need to stop putting on the same freaking suntan lotion that we're putting on. It's poisoning and killing the coral. Like, there are so many things to be aware of that should be being walked back on right now, saving this planet. And instead, climate change and blah, 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 like your one myopic way that the corporations have agreed to slowly over the next bunch of years in a way that we would like walk back on their climate emissions, which really ends up again hurting the working man, because these corporations have the money to pivot in a way that will not affect them in major ways. But meanwhile, smaller businesses that rely on gas and rely on whatever, they get screwed. So like all of this shit is just always to protect these giant conglomerates that are sucking our blood from the freaking country from being stopped. And like, you know, and this is why I'm just like, you know, we can't focus on all that shit. We just have to ignore the people who are truly awful and try and keep an open mind about what a huge group of middle there is, and join forces until we're all helping each other make money and take care of each other's families and making sure that everybody's safe and secure in this world. And like, we have not been doing that for forever. We grow up learning how to ignore homeless people. It's like the most despicable thing. When I realized one day that I had like conditioned myself to ignore a person who's on the street begging for help, and that was a terrible notion. And the idea that there's no mechanisms to do anything about that in our society is just crazy to me. Surely guy with a long beard would have thought of an idea to help the people who are struggling that bad that they need to beg me on the side of the road.
Yeah. And it's gotten to the point in my town, I could get ticketed if I'm seen giving money to a panhandler or anyone who's homeless or anything like that.
Seriously? Now, where do you live?
I live in Northern Illinois. Granted, I have witnessed many cops viewing people helping out other people, and the cops just don't give a shit. They're like, whatever.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I mean, freaking reasonable cops don't enforce unreasonable laws, but still.
But the fact that, you know, and I know there's plenty of other places that do this as well, where it's considered, you know, taboo to help these people. Now, granted, I also say in my town, there's a lot of charitable organizations, because this is a very much a working class town. And there's a lot of charitable places and food banks and stuff like that for people who can just come and go. And I have had, you know, my father-in-law helps out at the local Catholic food bank. And he's like, there's food left over because people either don't come because they're, you know, ashamed or whatever, or they just have lots of people who give because a lot of affluent suburbs. So there's not really like, it's just a very weird economy in this town where there's a lot of working class people, a lot of people are working. And there's the few people who've been here forever and have a ton of money, but there's like no businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a beautiful looking downtown Main Strip, but that whole downtown strip, fucking dead, you know? Mm. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the economy and the downturns that things happened in the early 2000s and all that. But besides that, you know, I think you made an excellent point with, you know, we have to look at the bigger thing, the you know, climate change and all that. It's like, there's so much other shit they're trying to distract us with. And these, you know, terrible, like the assholes are just amplifying it. And the media is amplifying the assholes. So we're all ignoring that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the boomers don't care because they're going to be dead before we're fucking, you know, burning alive.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't give a shit. And, but you know, it's okay. We got paper straws now.
Yeah.
It's okay. But anyway, I did not mean this conversation to turn into a whole discussion.
I love meaningful conversations, Don. Like, we have so many lackluster conversations in life, in society. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just like talking about nonsense doesn't get us anywhere. Changing mm-hmm. the conversation about how the conversation is makes us all think, makes us all grow and change, you know, for the better. This mm-hmm. situation, though, really frustrating for me as a professional working in an industry that was split down the middle and having good friends of mine who I know are good, upstanding people on both sides of a stupid argument that I can't get involved with in any way, shape, or form because it's just ugly and mm-hmm. and not my, you know, not of my interest either. You know, it just has been so disheartening to have to be quiet and not feel like I can talk about anything. And the only thing that's given me any catharsis over, you know, these years now, as I've come out of it, is talking about it and trying to create space and create conversation of people going, you know, I don't want to think of this industry as being awful. And I want to change my mind about this. And I want to believe that comics can get better and blah, blah, blah. You know, I really just believe that that's important stuff for us all to think and hope for.
Well, you know, the main thrust of my podcast, and I mentioned this earlier, you know, before we started recording, is I want people to talk about the things they love and get nerdy about that. And I think as a whole, the problem is we became so entrenched with talking about the things we hate and the things we don't like that we stop talking about the things we love and we stop being able to find connections with people about that. And when we are connecting with hate, that's when people become assholes because that's your end to the connection as opposed to, oh, I love kaiju. You love kaiju too? Cool. Who's your favorite kaiju? Like, let's talk about this stuff. Oh, your favorite's Godzilla. Which Godzilla's your favorite? I love the Millennium Godzilla. Do you love the Showa era? Like, let's talk about this stuff as opposed to like, I didn't really like this comic. Like, I tell you
Godzilla
this.
Godzilla was a dream come true. The last two, like, even though I don't really need them to be great movies. I just need to enjoy the monster stuff. And I have.
Yeah. I mean, my daughter's really taken to my Godzilla vinyls and my kaiju vinyls.
It's just so fun. I love it giant is. Monster movies. You know, it's so true. I was so upset all week long about this Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs thing that had been going on with Rachel Zegler kind of talking out of turn. Because nobody was defending it with love. Like, there was a lot of like, this bitch, you know, like, and like being annoyed with her. But nobody was like, do you understand that you're talking about the one that started it all? The Disney masterpiece that begins the whole thing? The first Disney princess? Like, you are talking so out of turn. You know, this is Disney's classic that they can hang their hat on. This is, you know, one of Walt Disney's greatest achievements, and you're sitting here talking about it like it's something that was passé and needed to be rewritten. It's the classic song of romance. I mean, the classic songs of romance and love, classic movie of fairy tale love. You know, when we said we wanted more inclusion, that meant adding Tiana and adding Mulan to the universe. It didn't mean rewriting Snow White so she was no longer a classic tale of love. And, you know, like, I think people just forget, like, to bring up, you know, it's not so much that we hated the She-Hulk that they made. We hated that they didn't do the She-Hulk that we loved. And I wanted to see more people talking about specifics. There were so many freaking great stories that they could have done and they didn't do, because instead they played some other game. You know, it's like focus on the love. And I think people will always be more receptive.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, I haven't read too much into the whole Snow White thing, but I feel like it's definitely with things of changing things just to change them. And that's just not cool. And, you know, I'm all for changing things, you know, and I am, you know, again, I think we mentioned before recording, like, we are like a couple weeks apart in age. I'm like a couple weeks older than you. And so we have all like the same cultural milestones for the most part with everything. And, you know, the Ninja Turtles were huge for me. They were one of the very first things I just absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. And I'm used to seeing different versions of that. And that used to you know, sometimes it would bother me. And then I'm like, you know, why is it bothering me? I have my Ninja Turtles. I have my Eastman and Laird collections. I have my original DVDs of, you know, the first one, The Secret of the Ooze. You know, I have that. I love TMNT in 2007, the CGI one. You know, sure, fine. You know, I don't think anyone loves The Next Mutation anyway. But
I loved that the last animated one that they did with all those. They were collecting all the cryptid animals that were all around the planet.
That was the 2007 one.
I liked that one a lot. That was a good
one. That was very much a tonal kind of like continuation of the first two. Mainly the first one, which, you know, that struck all the right things for me. You know, I watched the more recent CGI series that came out, what, in 2012, I think. I enjoyed it. They changed a lot of things, but that's fine. I have my stuff I can go back to. A lot of people didn't like the fact they were changing things. I'm like, well, but Turtles is one of those properties where they're always kind of changing things. You know, from the very beginning, they changed, you know, who Splinter was and all these things. And so I'm fine with that. And then, you know, I went in, you know, I was excited for Mutant Mayhem. I went in with a lot of, a little bit of trepidation just because I'm not the hugest Seth Rogen fan. Mm-hmm. And I saw there's so many changes, but I loved it. I'm like, this is not my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but there was something there where I felt like this generation, like I was happy that this generation of kids has this as their Ninja Turtles.
Well,
I love those kids
that.
Playing the Turtles.
I have to say though,
I wish some things were differently, like lore wise.
Well, that's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a professional writer. I've been doing this my entire life. There is a way to have your cake and eat it too. And that is the problem right now. The problem is they are doing things arbitrarily because they don't know any better. But like, you know, they could be inventing new characters, but they keep making the history of things sort of just more complex. There's a shared experience that's going on. And when you hit the nail on the head and get it all in balance, you never lose any member of your audience. They don't have to. They don't have to change in ways that loses people. You know, this movie wouldn't have lost you at all if, one, all those characters that were the bad guys, it was all the Mutanimals, and mm-hmm. it wasn't Bebop and Rocksteady and Scumbug and characters that had traditionally been viewed as bad guys for you, and you saw them a certain way, and now all of a sudden you're seeing in them, you know, in this new way that doesn't exactly make sense to your sensibilities. Or April O'Neil. If her name wasn't April O'Neil, that character would have worked just the same, would have been just as awesome, but it wouldn't have been April O'Neil. And great. Now April O'Neil can be introduce sometime in the future and be wonderful for the people who remember that April O'Neil exists. There are ways to do every single one of these things, and we don't have to accept all of this. I accept change. Like, no, man. Like, you don't. The fans deserve better. The fans need to guard the lore because we're going to lose it. When you start having this thing where you, well, you know, it's the thing, and I'm glad that it's what, like, okay, great, but it's lost its connection to all of the people. Its power is being diminished. It's like some sort of, like, adaptation of a biblical work, and you miss all the main points of the thing that everybody was there for. You know, you can't adapt Batman the Killing Joke and have Batman banging Barbara Gordon. That completely fundamentally changes the story. You've taken the focus off what it was originally about, why it was so striking, why it was interesting in the first place, and you've made it grotesque in some way on top of everything else. You know, these stories are loved for a reason. We need to honor them the way they are and build and add to them, not change them. Build and add to them all you want. One of my favorite characters from X-Men Evolution was Spike. I thought I was going to hate that character. Also love Scooter's sister from Muppet Babies. You know, characters are added to things all the time for better representation. And it's great when it's done right. When it's done right, you're like, yeah, another character that I love. This is awesome. I'm so happy. And when it's just changing of the characters, well, it really does start to have a muddled effect. And the people who are more open-minded like you are, you know, you find ways to enjoy it. I try to do the same thing. I would tell you that I mostly enjoy, like, you know, I give it like a 7.5 for Mutant Mayhem. But as a guy who's played with these action figures of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, yeah, I was really kind of bummed out to see Scumbag, like, just like an idiot, you know, or to see Bebop and Rocksteady like turn good guys at the end and not be connected in the right.
I totally get that. You know, I was like, oh, Leatherhead's small, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Or what's his name? Genghis Frog. I hated that because, like, it's like, if you don't do that, if you don't waste Genghis Frog as this bit joke and you just make up a new character, we'll get the bit joke. We'll have this character in the future. You can make that joke again. And I might still get a chance to see the punk frogs in the future. There's still more promise to the universe of things that the fans are already aware are there. And that's it. You know, it's all about doing things in a way that doesn't close any doors. But in order to do that, you have to be aware of what the doors are. And most of these big conglomerates that are handling these characters, they're not studying deeply enough to understand what the doors are. So they're constantly making seemingly arbitrary choices that close doors for the fans who might imagine. And the more the fans can imagine and get excited for what might come, the more toys they'll sell and the more interest they'll have. You know, that's the thing. It's about building worlds, and worlds have internal logic. And the moment you give up on, you know, actually creating a credible internal logic, you lose the people who want to sit there dissecting and enjoying the thing. You know, like, that's the big problem with Star Wars now. It's lost its awesome internal logic. You know, everybody's bitching about Osaka. You know, they immediately impaled somebody with a lightsaber. And, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn's in heaven going, oh, yeah, right, bullshit. You know, like it's like certain stakes are set up to have meaning for the audience, and you can't just arbitrarily change those stakes, or you start to really erode the real passion and interest that these people have built up for this franchise. You know, it's like you're getting their love and their excitement and the tenseness from the previous episodes, the previous deaths, and you squander it when you don't really see the full weight of that. I mean, and if you like any of the things that I, you know, I'm saying here on the show, you know, I do a podcast every week called The Coolest Geek Alive, which is just, you know, talking about the right ways to adapt this material. You know, I've worked on licensed material for Disney, Pixar, and the Muppets. I've worked for Marvel. I've worked for DC. I've worked for Heavy Metal. I've worked for Fangoria. I've worked for every major publisher there is. I've written all sorts of interesting things outside of comics as well. You know, the script for the Alice Cooper in the Mouth of Madness, slot machine, and one act plays and short films, and, you know, and a little sketches and commercials and everything. You know, I work in a lot of creative fields, and I have a lot of experience in, you know, in just the art of entertaining people. And, you know, and I really do believe there is always a way to satisfy everybody and to give people, you know, the experience that they're looking for. So, you know, I say never give up on that. I think we all deserve better.
No, I understand if folks are, you know, if there's like deal breakers with them with certain like, oh, I didn't like this interpretation of April, you know, on how the character acted or things like that. I thought it was funny. You know,
it's just not April as far as I'm concerned.
It's not the April I'm used to. But then, you know, I stop and I think, and I'm like, in the past 10 years, we've had literally 4 different versions of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in media.
And wouldn't it have been better if we had...
Actually, five, if you want to count the... or 6, actually, if you want to count Last Ronin as something.
Yeah.
We had the IDW series.
And wouldn't it have been better if we came out of every single one of those with new great characters that could be used at any given time by anybody, as opposed to mutilated versions of previous characters being reused, brought out, and repurposed, often by people who never knew about or cared about the one that the previous people had previously cared about?
No, I get your point of making new characters. Like, again, you know, the Genghis Frog thing and the Leatherhead thing, I didn't have as much of an attachment to those characters. I was a little like, oh, I guess that's the version of that. All right, it would have been cool to see the Punk Frogs. It would have been cool to see this giant freaking Leatherhead, especially with still being voiced by Rose Byrne.
Or have a Wingnut, a giant Wingnut. See, that was weird to me, too. You want to make a bunch of girl characters? Make girl characters. I didn't understand why Leatherhead was being voiced by a girl character. The previous time you saw him in the classic cartoon, he had a Cajun accent. An Australian accent made no freaking sense. Like, and these are things that, like, when my geek hat is on and my writing hat is on, I'm like, this is terrible writing. It's just terrible. And, like, and it deserves a 3 because of stupid choices like that. But at the same time, yeah. It's enjoyable. They got the main things right about the turtles, and there's a lot to enjoy about it. It looks pretty darn cool. I mean, granted, people's faces look swollen, but you know, like those little things that are weird, just make Rose Byrne her own character. Let her shine and introduce something that everybody can agree was a great addition to the franchise. That's cool, man. Don't like set people up to fail by depicting characters in ways that aren't natural to what people, the audience is expecting, and that the audience is probably not going to have a great disposition to. Like at this point, they should know taking a male character and just giving it to a girl, the audience is just going to be like, what's this? Why? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not an arbitrary thing that we were expecting the Crocodile Man to be kind of scary. Like, why not? Why not do that?
I understand like this, like the disparity of the voices and all that, like the whole gender thing of it all. Was like, honestly, I'm like, I don't care if it's a female crocodile, a male crocodile. If you show me a female crocodile and a male crocodile in the wild, I'm not gonna be able to tell the difference. I don't care.
But you know, she just might dress a little different.
The general vibe of the character is what I was kind of going for, you know. And yeah, I would have loved to see a giant Wingnut. And again, I would have loved to see like a full-size Genghis Frog and Screw Loose, you know. But then, you know, I can also sit back and say like, well, they tried something different in the context of everything. I still enjoyed it. But, you know, would I have liked to see these things? Sure.
Yeah. I could have enjoyed it a lot more though, but I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. But, you know, in the end, what I loved the most about it was it really had that feeling, the vibe. And a lot of it had to do with the kids playing the turtles.
Yeah. I think that was the main thing. That's one of the reasons why I didn't like Mondo Gecko being played by, Paul Rudd, because he sounded so much older than them. It was really genuine having the kids play the turtles. And Mondo is like, oh, well, see, Mondo is just, it's such a waste too, because Mondo was a cool character because he was a real kid who got turned into a gecko. And, you know, and so when the turtles got a friend in Mondo Gecko, it was like they had a human friend who was one of them now, you know, which was a very interesting dynamic. There's so many subtle things that, you know, go to waste that are appreciated by fans of the material when you're a fan. Like, you know, I could have went in there and I would have like if they had said, hey, Jesse, will you come in and give us a little advice on this Mutant Mayhem? And I promise you the changes that I would have made, you guys would have been like, oh man, even better. How is it that you nailed it? Oh, it's your aunt, April, who works at the news station, who you can totally get this material to. Oh, it's, you know, it's the Mutanimals being introduced here as a group, or hey, it's a whole new group of characters being voiced by a great crop of character actors who give meaning to them. And there's a whole new crop of mutant toys that they can be producing. And then the promise of other characters to come is still there. You know, things like that, that just solve all your problems. Like it does not have to be partially broken for the sake of the future. And like, that's like the thing that I hear people spewing online all the time. And it's the people who are basically defending the most liberal voices in the room. And either you guys are being very nice and polite and saying what you're saying, but we don't have to break a few eggs to do the thing. Like it's like we can actually make something that everybody likes. It doesn't have to be divisive like this. It can be handled in a way that doesn't piss people off. You just have to find the right people to oversee these projects. You know, the John Lasseters of the world, people who really know their shit, and make sure the stuff you're making is awesome. And they are clearly not doing that anymore, which is frustrating for the fans. You know, me as a fan, like I literally go out of my way to ruin movies for myself so I will enjoy them. Like, I'm just like, I want to know everything that I might not like about this movie before I see it, because I want to like it. I you know, there's certain types of movies I want to go like it. I want to like Godzilla, you know, and if I hear that there's some bad thing that I might not like about the movie, I spoil it for myself. So that I go in knowing, all right, there's a thing in here that I might not like. And in general, I always love all the movies. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm a professional writer. I've been studying this medium for 30 plus years now and winning awards in various categories of writing. I know how to write. I know how this stuff works. And I'm constantly let down by the level of craftsmanship that is going on, especially in Hollywood.
I understand. And, you know, I'm not trying to give the movie like any additional grace or anything like that. I'm not trying to like, oh, well, you know, it's okay if this doesn't work. My legitimate position is the fact that these things get turned over so much. Part of the reason I'm bringing up, there's literally been, you know, there's six different versions of the Turtles within the past 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it failed, the Michael Bay one. Apparently, toy sales were terrible. And this was a repudiation of those toy sales, which the toys are very nice and the designs are very nice. As a Turtle fan, they're fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so for me, it feels like, okay, you know, this version of Leatherhead is not what I expected, you know. You know, I'm not the world's number one Leatherhead fan. I like the character, of course. You know, I have fond memories of the character showing up in you know, multiple versions of the show.
Leatherhead.
Yeah, and I can understand someone being disappointed that that's not what they got. They got this little short one, you know, with a voice they didn't expect. But, you know, in the back of my head, like, I'm like, okay, you know. And then, you know, the only thing I can think of is like, well, hopefully for that person, they'll get that version of the character sooner. You know, like, I don't know anyone who's a Ray Filet stan, you know, but, you know, I loved this.
I love Ray Filet. I'm a toy guy. So when you're a toy guy, and I mean, and this is the bit of like, all we have to go on is the back of the package, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what it says, and then we base our stories around that thing. Scumbug is a bad guy, a real scummy bad guy, because that's his name, Scumbug, and he came with a gun, and he was one of the nastier of the looking guys. So how are we playing with him? That's how we're playing with him. When you go and you depict him as just stupid in this movie, for somebody who actually had that toy, it's just so tone deaf. Like, did you look at this toy? Have you seen how this character has been depicted in pretty much every other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing? Are you clowning your audience? Would this have been just as funny if it wasn't named Scumbug and it was just a character that you had invented on your own? Ding, ding, ding. Yes, it would have. Don't call it Scumbug. Like, what a waste. what a waste of my Scumbug character.
And, you know, I have very little doubt that the usage of all these characters were obviously driven by toys. And I think the creators behind it, I've full belief that they were told they had to have this list of characters in there. So they had to make those characters fit the story they were telling with those names to sell those toys. Now, sure, I'm probably sure they could have adjusted things as they wanted, but maybe they didn't want to. And fine, maybe they did have,
well, you may be right, Don.
A little annoying lizard-like character, or whatever, that would have been a better fit than using Leatherhead for the fans. And I think that's disappointing that it still comes down to stuff like that, because it's just those higher decision level things that creators have to make that compromise with. I would like to believe that, but then maybe just Seth Rogen and crew thought it'd be fucking funny to have a tiny Leatherhead voiced by Rose Byrne, and that was it to them.
Well, that probably is it. I think you hit the nail on the head that, there are often constraints beyond what I'm talking about. And granted, there are ways to get around these issues, but a simple issue as, oh, well, if they create any characters for us, they want to own part of the mm-hmm. characters. So that way you have to create April O'Neil. We own her. Anything you create called April O'Neil belongs to us. Anything you create called, here are names that you can use. But still, even under those circumstances, there are deeper cut characters that they could have used. There's characters that they could have made specifically for the film to introduce a bunch of new characters that they could have designed themselves as toys and had in the bank, and then introduce a whole bunch of new characters. There's just always other ways. Where there's a will, there is a way to get it done right. And Hollywood just doesn't currently have the will. They want all of us fans to just shut up and eat what we've been given. And, people like you and I, we largely do. But the masses, man, the masses will disappear over time if you're not giving them the goods.
No, for sure. And, I was a little shocked, at the end where it's like, oh, Bebop and at the very least, Bebop and Rocksteady are siding with the Turtles, and then, but
subtle change. Guess, they could have ended that in a such better way. So many,
And who knows, maybe in the sequel, it's like, turned heel right after or whatever, or just like, wait a second, I want to be this or whatever. Who knows? They're introducing Shredder. They got the Utrom thing happening, however it goes. Again,
I'm so annoyed about that though, because one, they didn't connect Bebop and Rocksteady to Shredder. They could have actually left it open-ended for that. Even though Bebop and Rocksteady being part of the babies that Superfly makes isn't really, it's weird because they have a very specific style, which is just so fucking iconic. And the style just doesn't make any sense when they're just mutant animals. But whatever. So but disconnected from them, now they have to be connected together. And this movie, the biggest crime of this movie was it made their karate a joke. It made Donnie's bo staff a joke. It's just the most evil thing, perpetrated upon the Turtles. That I've seen in the adaptations of them, making it like an aerobics karate video that Splinter learns karate from. No, dude, that literally makes every scene that comes after it a scene where we're like, well, would they be able to credibly do any of this? I don't think so. And no deep connection to Shredder and Urokusaki. Mm-hmm. And that shit's so fundamental to the Turtles lore. I don't understand how you don't just set it up.
that along with the Michael Bay ones were like the one thing where I'm like, you know what? That's if I had to, pick something I just did not like that I would really want changed, it is that.
Yeah.
Because it was I want that tie. Maybe they have some wiggle room to make it seem like he was still, Hamato Yoshi's rat. We don't know his life before that because he was full grown or whatever.
But the notion that he didn't know how to fight kind of.
But there's going to be some kind of retconning thing happen, or I don't know, something. Or not.
I don't know.
Who knows
how they're going to do it. I think they're going to try.
Yeah. I don't know why across these two pieces of media, they're we need to make it like they learned it from a book or a video. And it's like, why? Like you had the perfectly ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was a weird one. It's ridiculous, but I absolutely love the scene in the first Ninja Turtles where, the rats fucking practicing ninjutsu in the cage. It was just, I absolutely love that. It was one of my favorite things.
When Donnie's screaming in their first big fight, and Donnie keeps going, "I have a stick." And I was just like, I always assume that you chose that because of prowess or preference. Yeah, not because like they gave me a stick. Splinter gave me a stick, guys. Like what? That was just so lame to me. Like broke my mind when I first realized what was being said. I was like, wait a second, are you really like calling out the series here for giving him a bow staff? It's a pretty classic weapon. And, you know, one of the better ones in terms of a children's program about ninjas.
Yeah. And you got lots of range with it. Like, I feel like with that, like, again, like I'm fine with this version, whatever. Again, I have much less of a endearment to like, you know, each version, like maybe it's the cynical part of me. But it's like, you know, not every version is going to be exactly for me. You know, they also have to like have it for kids. Like my daughter absolutely loved the movie. Cool. Her and I can geek out about Turtles. I went and I got a bunch of like Target had like the retro, like the animated version of the characters from the 87 show, the little die cast metal figures that are like an inch tall or whatever. They had the whole set of everybody. And, you know, she was able to identify everybody, even though she's never seen that show. You know, she saw Bebop and Rocksteady. She saw Shredder. She saw, you know, I don't know how she identified April O'Neil, but that's fine. She's like, that's April.
Yeah,
by process assimilation.
You get out of it, like, you know, that thing, you know, the designs are nice. I mean, granted, Mondo Gecko. I was a little disappointed in his design because I always liked how Mondo Gecko was designed. Yeah. He was pretty iconic in my mind. And it's like when you don't view these characters as iconic, you play with them like they need to be reinvented. But I had already viewed him as pretty iconic. I would have loved to seen him in that style, but done more the way that I traditionally remember him, you know, in green with the backwards cap, you know, some version of that. Because to me, that rings in my memory. But, you know, I really just do believe when they can do it with a little bit more nuance and subtlety where, you know, the adjustments that you have to make in your mind of how this universe works compared to the one you're used to are very small. You know, that's the best experience that your audience that loves it already can have. And that's the best way to get people talking and continue the conversation and build a fandom, as the people who are paying attention compare notes from the one thing to the other thing. And now, because the first thing that they made years ago matters still because it's been honored still, now we go and we sell tickets to that as well. And you perpetually are making money on your old catalog and you're still making money on all the new things that you made. But it's like a chain of evidence, you know, like you make sure that like nobody ever touches the chain of evidence. We know where this evidence is going to be this entire time. So it doesn't get corrupted. It doesn't disappear. So we have it at the end of the thing. Well, there needs to be a chain of evidence with the continuity of all of these things, the reasons why we're showing up. So the audience doesn't get lost in the shuffle because, yeah, new audiences are made every day. But are you retaining your old audience? What does every business know is the most important thing? To hold on to customers, not to get new ones. New ones, that takes a lot of energy. Holding on to the old ones that you already have, that's priority number one. You want your business to succeed, hold on to the old ones, and then go out and get new ones. And there's a way to do it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, I have hopes that, you know, for the sequel and all that, maybe they'll see some of the response and say, okay, let's try to keep things more, let's try to honor what came before a little bit more than we did. Cause even though, like, you know, I laughed at a lot of the jokes, you know, I laughed in the moment, like what the stick joke or whatever, like I chuckled at it in the moment, but in the overall thing, like, yeah, it's silly that they're making a joke about it, but I'm like, okay. Whatever. Again, I'm not trying to like be, you know, overly forgiving of the movie or whatever. I just, you know, I prefer to like think about the things I enjoyed and I love, because that's just a better way to live, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, no, I'm the same way.
And I'm not saying you're doing the opposite.
Oh no, no. When I became a film critic when I was young, I realized really quickly that like it's so easy to get crotchety about all the movies, but I have to analyze them from a higher level after the fact. You know, like when people ask me about movies, I can't just say, oh, it was great. No, I have to tell you what I noticed about it. And, and most of these things, I noticed a lot of things. I noticed a lot of things that could be really being handled much better. And I don't understand why the people being paid the big salaries aren't doing a better job at, like, you know, making sure these things are shepherded across the finish line. Because I do believe that something like a Ninja Turtles, every single time they make a movie, it should make them $1 billion. And I really believe that if they had simply honored the past and had been honoring the past with every subsequent Ninja Turtle thing that they made on television, whatever else, what they would have created is a $1 billion film juggernaut that every single time they released anything was just the equivalent of the Marvel Universe. They could be making something that was unstoppable. But instead, somewhere along the way, from the, you know, the very first bits of reinventing the cartoons, they've sent a message to the audience that every reinvention of the cartoon could potentially be so radically different as to be unrecognizable from the thing that I like. And the toys may take on a design that is going to be unrecognizable from the thing I like. Everything is going to possibly just change on a dime. And that audience now is kind of fair weather. And they wait to hear what people have to say about the Ninja Turtles. And it's not a wave of people who are perpetually going and supporting Ninja Turtles like it could have been, because the energy is there for Ninja Turtles. It's this trickle in, trickle out, we'll see how it is, let's see what the word of mouth is thing, instead of something of like biblical power, you know, a great adaptation of something that is like continuing to please audiences each time it turns, turning in a new generation, adding them to the generations. There are Ninja Turtles conventions all across the country because we can all understand the love of the Ninja Turtles. Instead, there's a lot of like separate audiences for the different things, and some are more popular than others because they didn't really get it right, or, you know, misfired or whatever it might be, and it wasn't a big hit. You know, there's a lot of different incarnations of the Ninja Turtles at this point that various people have watched or not watched, or have decided wasn't great, because I watched the live action one with Venus de Milo and I thought it was shit. You know, it's just, there's been so many. But Imagine if it had been truly handled in a way where, like, did you see that freaking fan video of the guy in the Ninja Turtles creature shop, Raphael costume, fighting the ninjas in like a gritty warehouse battle, and he's bleeding and he's kicking these foot soldiers' asses? It is so dope and cool, man. You know, if that level of respect has been going on, instead of like writers coming in and goofing on Donnie's bo staff in the middle of the fight, which is deconstructionist, not constructionist, not building things, deconstructing the things that are there, making fun of the things that we've already accepted as canon and cool and we like. You know, like, this is backwards thinking, backwards writing.
No, I follow you there. It's, and I would, you know, adult me and probably kid me would love, you know, a full on, you know, gritty, very, you know, like I haven't seen that short you just talked about, but something so like cool. That
I shared it on my Twitter, I think.
Okay, I'll go dig it up. But something, you know, part of me is like, yeah, that would be, I would love to see a whole movie that really delves into is as did gritty and dark as the original Mirage series.
Yeah,
I would absolutely love that. But I also know it's that they're owned by Nickelodeon now, and as we're talking about this and all the different variations, I can't help now but think, like, maybe a lot of the Mutant Mayhem stuff, like, it kind of feels like they're trying to touch on all of the people. They're trying to hit something for everybody who's liked something about the Turtles. Because people, like, who grew up with, like, you and me, we can appreciate the grittiness of the art style. We can appreciate the banter with the kids and all that. And on a surface level, we can say, like, I'm glad at the very least, like, they're recognizing some of these older characters or whatever. But then you have stuff that's kind of similar to what they did in the, you know, a CGI animated series back in 2012 or whatever. And then also stuff from like Rise of the TMNT and stuff like that. They're kind of like trying to catch all the vibes, which I can see why that would totally turn people. on it as well.
Well, I really do think you can capture all the vibes. It's just those other little subtle balls that are getting dropped of, yeah. Hey, this isn't Wingnut. Wingnut is a Batman homage, and the Ninja Turtles are a Daredevil homage. Comic book homages is kind of the subtext of Ninja Turtles. Don't use Wingnut and not use the Batman homage. That's the best part. You're wasting a really major good character from this mythology. You know, we're living in the age where we're getting a Madam Web movie from freaking Spider-Man, and they're wasting Wingnut. You know, like don't waste Wingnut. That's like a character that you can introduce properly and people demand a film, you know, if you really make it funny and you do it the right way. And Wingnut has been done really well and really hilariously a number of times. And as somebody who played with the toy, you know, so it's just like, There's gold in them there hills, yeah. And it's more, again, I said that it's the doors that you close. Mm-hmm. You close certain doors and they can't be opened again, or you have to do all sorts of stupid things in order to open them again. And that's really the thing that I think, like, you know, stops people the most. My babies are trying to beat in the door because I told them I was going to be less time.
Oh, absolutely. We've definitely gone on long.
Is it all right if we wrap things up? I would love to talk about King of Kings really briefly if I could.
Let's get to why you contacted me in the first place. You have a Kickstarter that it is when the show posts, it'll be just over a week left on it. But as of right now, you have 16 days to go and you're, you know, $1,100 over your goal, which great. But, you know, as someone who's been part of plenty of Kickstarters, that's just a start.
The goal
is the start. You hope to do it early enough to where you can hit some stretch goals. So you can get some more breathing room with things. You can try to get some more stuff done.
Yeah.
So first things first, Jesse, tell us about King of Kings.
Well, this book is 12 years in the making, and it's another one of my crazy centrists, can't we all get along? Maybe I can get there by making fun of everybody's religion and trying to demonstrate that we're all largely, you know, talking about a lot of similar things, worshiping people who we respect for whatever reasons. And a lot of the times, you know, some of that's inflated to various degrees. And so we've got this big battle of the bands between the Norse mythology and Catholicism, which is basically revenge on the Northern Crusades, which almost wiped the Norse religion off the face of the planet to some degree. And we've got a huge battle of the bands featuring Scientology and Mormons and, you know, the Muslims and the Jews, and just everybody's represented. And it's this big comedy kind of inspired by the life of Brian artistically. And was originally brought to me by buddy Mark Poulton, who didn't know anything about music, but wanted to do this battle of the band, not a battle of the bands. He wanted to do a behind the music with the Norse band Odin, the Gods of Rock. And I just thought that was really funny. And I asked him if Jesus could be the bad guy. And he said, yeah. So, you know, eventually that became this tournament where Jesus gets his title, King of Kings. And they've been, you know, battling instead of the Crusades, instead of all these holy wars, we'll fight in a battle of the bands. And everybody can determine in the court of public opinion, basically, you know, who is the best religion there is or whatever. It's been a labor of love. It's a comedy, which is just the thing that I've been studying my whole life. I'm so proud of everybody that I worked with on the book. The book came out so good. We got into a lot of trouble because I was funding everything myself, my publishing company, the Killer Rabbits Company. Our slogan is, we're here to save you. Trying to do comics the right way, you know, give ownership to the people who are working on things. And I was making a lot of really good money at the time. And I decided to fund everything. And I was funding a number of different books. And I lost money on the book that I did for Four Horsemen Studios, which was an art book for their Mythic Legions toy line. And I basically broke even with a book that I put out through Image Comics called Blacklight District 6 Issues, which is a music comic book thing. And King of Kings just stopped in its tracks. I couldn't finish it. It was a 4-issue miniseries. And I was through paying for three issues to be produced, and the fourth issue was written but wouldn't be drawn, and I couldn't get the other books colored and lettered, so I was just sitting on one finished issue, and I tried to raise money on Indiegogo, and we got shadow banned, and I didn't know it at the time. I thought that like we had failed and people weren't interested in the book, and after 2 weeks of only being able to get friends and family to donate to the campaign, I quit. And then I found, because I didn't want my friends and my family to be the ones who were single-handedly raising money for the book. I wanted to, you know, to do it the way that I was originally going to do it, which was going to conventions. But when I found out this past Christmas that I'd been banned on Indiegogo, I was like, well, that's it. I'm going back and I'm trying again. And this time I'm going to try Kickstarter. And so we've been on Kickstarter and we've been able to make our initial raise, which is for $5,000. But that's just so I can print this book and it's not sitting in on my computer anymore. You know, it's basically like 10,000, 15,000 is when I'm going to be able to color, letter, and start producing the final issue of this series so that I can offer the whole series to everybody. This isn't, you know, even paying myself back for any of the thousands of dollars that I laid out to bring it to life. You know, we've designed 50 plus characters. We've color designed all of the characters that are in the book. I mean, so much time and effort went into me demonstrating to others how you make a great comic, how long you take to edit it, how long you take to work on these things to make sure that they come out right. And I produced this thing with just so much love and attention to detail, and it's just been sitting, waiting to be released. So I'm so grateful to everybody who's donated to the campaign so far. Thank you if you're out there and you're listening. I so appreciate everybody. I will appreciate and know everybody's name by heart who has contributed to this first campaign. I've got a lot more campaigns to come, not just for the next issues of this series, but additional things I'm going to be doing with friends in the next, you know, year. And I'm so excited to begin this conversation with people. And the conversation is over on that Kickstarter page. So if you like any of the things that I've said today, you know, or like anything that I've said about my book, you know, follow me, you know, on anywhere that you listen to podcasts, on Spotify, whatever. I'm the coolest geek alive, Jesse Blaze Snyder. And I release two episodes a week. My main show's on Wednesday, and my Saturday morning episodes are just kind of little fun ones, top 10 lists and little interviews or reviews of things. And my comic, King of Kings, is on Kickstarter right now. King of Kings number one. Please go and grab one of these packages. They are all being printed in very limited quantities. I'm not going to be printing a lot of overages of this stuff. So if you get these things, it will be very limited. You know, not everything's going to end up getting sold, you know, at the time that, you know, I don't think so by the end of the thing, that some of these really limited packages, and I'm not going to be printing a lot more of what is there, you know, like if we don't sell all 50 of these limited things, well, I'm not printing 50 of them, you know, I'm going to print the five that we need, and then I might print like 10 more, you know, but that's it. So, I mean, these are all going to be very limited editions of the book, and it will be reprinted in future campaigns. But if you get in on the ground floor here, you're going to actually have some really valuable things long-term for the Killer Rabbits Company, which is going to be publishing for a long time to come. I mean, I've got like 8 projects already lined up, and they're all happening because it's just me and my friends working on all this stuff for free because we're capable of doing it on our own.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, King of Kings going to be on Kickstarter for, again, about another week or so. I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes below. Sounds pretty fun. it definitely sounds like you're got a lot of passion for this, and that's, you know, again, let's celebrate what we love, people. Let's talk about the things we enjoy. Let's make cool things.
Wait, can I say, because I realize, you know, this is the Comics Coffee Metal, like, you know, this is the most metal comic book ever. This is that my lead character is based on Lemmy Kilmister. You know, his son Thor is based on Zach Wilde, and then his son is based, he's basically just like a very scrawny Misfits member. He's got a side project called The Mischiefs with a bunch of frost giants. You know, and he has an old side project with Judas, which is a Rainbow Bridge Over Troubled Water. And it's Loki and Judas. And Judas is based on Art Garfunkel. because Loki kind of looks a little bit like a Paul Simon with, like, you know, with the mohawk in the front, like the Misfits guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, we've got every genre covered. You know, the Greek gods are based on Kiss. They're Olympus, but it's like Kiss. Mm-hmm. If they only ever put out that one disco record, their one record in the book is called Dynasty because they're a disco band. They're the disco label. And I mean, there's just that we wrote an award-winning heavy metal song to promote it. If you go to the page, you can see a song that I had my father, D. Snyder, sing on. I sing on it as well. It's like this thing of I play Thor with a real high singing and he plays Odin. And we do this song called Fight to the Death that we won an award in the 21st annual USA Songwriting Competition for Best Humor Song. But it's a classic metal anthem for the Norse religion called Fight to the Death. It's awesome. And we've got a lot of little awards and things, you know, on the page from the music angle of it. You know, you can get yourself a Jesus and the Apostles shirt, and those are modeled after Iggy Pop and the Stooges. You know, and then you can get yourself an Odin and the Gods of Rock shirt, which are modeled after Motorhead. We've got the Fenris Wolf as the Motorhead monster.
Yes, that was
you know,
really
for
cool.
The Odin and the Gods of Rock t-shirts. And we've got tour t-shirts available. I mean, really, really limited things that you can prize in your collection for all time. And know that you were responsible for helping us fundraise to get this thing done. And I appreciate it. It means a lot to me. You know, for those who don't know, these past like 6 years in particular have been just a lot of really rough life hit me, and just a lot of it is just sort of unfortunate timing and whatever else. But it was a bad moment in time for me to put everything that I had into starting a publishing company. But here I am back again to see it through to the end, because I know the way, and I want to see better art in the world, and I'm not going to stop until I get it.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for bringing that up. I wanted to mention it, but I was also trying to make sure I don't keep you too much longer, because I know we could probably get into a whole thing about all of it. I see an Ozzy homage in there. You know, I'm pretty sure that's Ozzy on the cover there towards the bottom. But
I think you're actually seeing that's a skinny John Lennon. That's Buddha. Okay. Buddha. He's lost all the weight, and now he's using his dick as a belt and his extra skin as the robe.
Well, there you go.
And he wears little bunny slippers, and he wears the John Lennon glasses.
I definitely wanted to ask you about the music aspect of Lost.
We do a cover of Close My Eyes Forever, a parody of Close My Eyes Forever in the second book. Thor is a closet homosexual. His wife, Sif, is a closet homosexual. They are both each other's beards. And so we do a parody of the song, If I Grow My Beard Forever. And they sing back and forth to each other about basically covering for each one another's queerness. It's very funny.
Well, there you go. If you haven't been sold already, there you go. It sounds like this definitely sounds like an extremely metal book. So totally apt to be talking about it on the show. Yes. Go check out the song. Go check out the page. There'll be a link in the show notes below. And Jesse, I won't keep you and your kids away from your kids any longer.
Thank
before
you.
They break down your door.
They keep barging in. They're like, come on, you told me an hour. I'm sorry. It's a good conversation.
We started talking about turtles.
We started talking about things and we got carried away.
Jesse, thank you.